I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we have to free our cities from Antifa. And there's really only two ways that that's going to happen. One, either citizens take matters into their own hands, which I certainly don't want to see. Or two, we get help from the federal government. We will talk about the events of the weekend, the assaults on myself and another independent journalist, and what we're hoping the feds will do to help protect citizens of cities like Seattle from the scourge of left-wing political violence. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our work and our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. First things first, I'm fine. I'm sure many of you have seen the video of me being swarmed by Antifa far-left extremists over the weekend. I'll talk about that more in a moment. You know, I struggled with how to structure the show today in a way that doesn't make it about me in that moment, because it's really not. We're talking about a much broader issue. And besides, there was another independent journalist who was assaulted far worse than I was and could have been killed. And I think it was in Antifa's intention to kill him. You know, but as always on the show, you know, we try to take these things that happen and make a broader point about them, a point that can change things, a point that will make us look at things a little bit differently or encourage our elected leaders to look at things a little bit differently. So I'll start off the top just by saying, I want you to tag every freaking person you can think of from the Trump administration in today's episode, in the clips that we'll put out after the fact, because this is the intention of today's show, okay? The intention of today's show is to convince the federal government to send help to Seattle, whether Seattle wants it or not, which it certainly doesn't. We don't care. At the end of the day, for the better part of 15 years, our local quote-unquote leaders and our state leaders have refused to take seriously or even acknowledge the ongoing threat of violent left-wing political extremism, which is a daily reality in places like Seattle and, hell, in places like Portland. You know, I keep thinking maybe something serious enough will happen. Maybe they'll do something serious enough for people like Governor Bob Ferguson, Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell, to take seriously the threat they pose to journalists, to the public at large, to police officers, now to federal agents. Maybe they'll do something bad enough to get them to actually acknowledge even the existence of Antifa. But it has become very clear over many years, and also in light of what happened over the weekend, that there is nothing that will get Democratic leaders in our state to take this threat seriously. So we need the help of the federal government, because there's only two ways forward from here. Well, there's three. Either we allow it to just continue to happen, and we just decide that that's part of life on the West Coast, and we're just going to deal with it, and businesses have to deal with it, and citizens have to deal with it, and police have to deal with it, and federal agents have to deal with it. So either we resign ourselves to that, or the other two options, citizens start taking matters into their own hands, which I'll tell you what, after this weekend, I really felt like that's something that I wanted to do. Took a couple deep breaths and thought better of it. It's certainly not something we want to see. We don't encourage violence on this show, even if it's violence in defense of yourself. I mean, certainly there's a place for that. But the last thing I want is for conservatives groups to show up and start beating the hell out of Antifa. I don't think that's going to end well for anyone. So the third option, and I think it's the only reasonable, realistic option, is that before he leaves office in 3 years, we get help from Donald Trump to finally deal with an issue that has plagued our communities for too long, is only getting worse, and is only spreading. So that's the entire point of today's show. So tag DOJ, FBI, Trump administration, anyone you can think of, because we need help. So as I said, I struggled with how to figure out how to kind of structure today's show. So I thought, you know, the best way to do this is probably sequentially, so you can understand really the true cowardice that's at play and what's at stake in a broader sense. So we knew there were going to be these massive No Kings protests over the weekend, which, of course, I'm fine with. I went to the one in Seattle and covered it. I'll talk about that in a moment. But whenever there's going to be any sort of left-wing, Democrat-run or attended gathering of any kind in the city of Seattle, it goes hand in hand with violence. That's just the truth. You name one, besides maybe an Earth Day march or something, Democrat-attended gathering that has not devolved in some way in recent years into chaos or vandalism or violence. So of course that's a concern, right? Especially in light of what happened the week before last in Los Angeles and how these anti-ICE, anti-Trump demonstrations devolved into widespread violence on the streets of Los Angeles, so bad that the federal government had to get involved. So there was a press conference held by local elected leaders and the governor in the lead up to the No Kings protest that was planned in Seattle. And look, usually I'd say good for them. It was the who's who of progressive Democrats in the state of Washington having this press conference in Seattle. They were standing there with signs that said peaceful protest. And in any other circumstance, I would say, great, I'm glad that they're calling on people to be peaceful. But this is a group of individuals that has fomented violence, that has encouraged violence by ignoring it from one side. And so it's just rich to me that now they're going to say, and we're the side that wants peaceful protests. Like, well, okay, where have you been, Bob Ferguson, for 15 years? Where were you in the 12 years you were attorney general? And you didn't say anything about the takeovers in Seattle or the assaults on police officers. And now all of a sudden you're out there to make a political point. We're the ones who are going to be peaceful. Give me a break. But one part of that that I thought was noteworthy, somehow word got out of where this press conference was going to be. And oh, the irony of who showed up. Antifa showed up. Literally, Black Bloc Antifa showed up to, I don't know, try to intimidate these elected leaders or try to show them that, hey, we're actually the ones who are in charge, which they are, right? They own these Democratic politicians. But there were also members of the community that showed up, including our friend Andrea Suarez, a homeless outreach individual who runs We Heart Seattle, who was assaulted a week ago, last Monday, outside the federal building. We talked about it on the show. We showed video of it. So she wanted to know from the mayor of Seattle, from the governor, will you, while they're standing here in their Black Bloc, will you specifically condemn Antifa?
You're my leader. Tell these people to stand down and stop assaulting me and taunting my civic servant hero, Tim Emerson, right now at this park we've cleaned. These are violent Antifa land people. Tell them to be peaceful. The detective said they
You're
can't.
Asking us to play by the rules?
She just said we will not be peaceful. She just said it.
Well, we're happy to chat with you after.
I was assaulted. I have a case number.
Cowards.
Bring Twan home.
What is your opinion, though, based on Seattle, Spokane? Is most of the violence from the far left and Antifa so far? I know my colleague asked about these, you know, folks who are dressed in black right now who are causing all the chaos. I was there Wednesday evening reporting. I almost got hit by a mortar by one of these guys in black goggles.
My opinion is, I know in Spokane there were multiple arrests. Hope I have my numbers right, but I think 20 to 30 arrests, if I recall correctly, in Spokane and in Seattle there were multiple arrests. So from my standpoint, I don't care who it's coming from. If you are engaging in lawful behavior, you're going to be held accountable. That's our message today. That's in my message in a statement that was put out yesterday. We're going to be reinforcing that message as well. That's our message with our law enforcement partners. So wherever it's coming from, I'm focused on making sure we hold folks accountable. Thanks for the question.
Will you condemn Antifa?
I'm condemning anyone who engages in lawful behavior, and they'll be held accountable. Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
So no, he won't condemn Antifa. Presented with an opportunity in that moment before anything happened on Saturday by a citizen who, as she rightly points out, my volunteers cleaned this park we're standing in. We are good citizens of this city. Condemn Antifa. They assaulted me. And you have the coward Bruce Harrell sitting there silent. Silent. When asked specifically multiple times if he would condemn Antifa, Governor Bob Ferguson makes it a both sides issue. Oh, whoever it is, of course. Okay, then condemn specifically the organization and the people who perpetrate 99% of the politically motivated violent extremism in your state. They're standing right there. Look at them and tell them, you're the governor of the state of Washington. You're surrounded by a security detail. Are you so scared of Antifa that you won't condemn them to their face? And if you're so scared as the governor, surrounded by a security detail with news cameras all around you, that you can't condemn Antifa to their face because it frightens you, then imagine how everyone else feels when they're unleashed onto communities with absolutely no repercussions. So that's what set the stage for all of this, is a cowardly, demonstrative press conference from so-called leaders who can't even condemn Antifa or acknowledge Antifa's existence. What do we say all the time on this show about other things? You cannot solve a problem that you fail to properly identify. So you think that the people who won't even acknowledge that Antifa is a real problem are going to solve the Antifa problem in any meaningful way? Of course not. So that happened. Again, going sequentially here. The No Kings protest in Seattle, peaceful. Massive. I went to it. I documented it. I might have gotten some people sneering at me, but no one was violent to me. Really, no one was even very rude to me. And I will say I was incredibly impressed with the turnout. I love this country. I love the Constitution. I love the First Amendment. And so to see Americans, as misguided as I think they might be, out there in force, peacefully demonstrating, I have not a problem, nary a problem in the world with it. Did I think some of their signs were stupid? Yes. But I applaud them. That is a huge turnout, also reflective of why Republicans don't win anything in the state of Washington. I don't think there's a single issue on the face of this planet that could get that many Republicans out or conservatives out to protest on a Saturday. You know, I could talk endlessly about the whole No Kings movement. It's clearly just asinine. I found it fascinating that you have these Democrats who were perfectly fine with 975 days of one-man rule in the state of Washington during the pandemic, mandates that upended people's lives, now saying that Donald Trump is the one acting like a dictator. I also found it interesting that they used all this American patriotic imagery around the Constitution, you know, even the American flag, and oh my God, a don't tread on me flag here and there that just really drove me nuts. People who have never seemed to care much about any of those things now using them to make a political point. But they did it peacefully. I don't care. It was a peaceful, festive environment. And as Bob Ferguson pointed out, as that protest came to an end on Saturday, he took to his social media. He said, one of the largest protests in Seattle history at Cal Anderson Park today. Thanks for keeping it peaceful, Seattle. So up to that point, I certainly would have agreed with the governor and also applauded, as I did on social media during and after the event, individuals who came out to exercise their First Amendment rights, although I certainly disagree with their overall message. But that's not a problem. The problem, of course, comes into play with Antifa and this group of people that can't be more than 100 violent individuals who will use any protest for any reason to carry out their anarchy. And we know this, and this is why it was so problematic that when met with them face to face, before any of this happened, Bob Ferguson wouldn't condemn them, that he wouldn't name them, that he wouldn't say specifically to Antifa, to anarchists, to the violent Black Bloc factions, we will prosecute you to the fullest extent of the law. Specifically, we see you, we're tracking you, we will out you. Nothing, no message directed at the people who were actually going to be violent and who he knew would be violent. So what did it do? Well, it gave them cover to continue in their violent ways. So as, I don't know, maybe as much as 50,000 people were marching peacefully on the streets of Seattle, Antifa and the anti-ICE crowd used it as an opportunity, knowing that much of the law enforcement resources would be directed toward dealing with that massive crowd in Seattle. They decided to go down to a Homeland Security building in Tukwila. Apparently, ICE, there was word that was spread among these far-left factions that ICE had called in some individuals who were in the country illegally, awaiting hearings. They were on ankle monitors. They were to be called into this Department of Homeland Security building. And so ICE, you know, is going to do that. The far left, they end up spreading this around. So Antifa shows up at this building, blocking it with barricades, getting into what they always do, violent confrontations with the police. Riot police from Tukwila, DHS, they had to be called in to contend with this group, but really all they did is back them up long enough to let the ICE vehicles with the detainees get out of the area And then they just left Antifa to their own devices. To sit there, to take over the streets, to take over a federal building. See, just backing off. I mean, no meaningful arrests made of any kind. Just enough to be able to allow ICE agents to get out of the area. So this is happening simultaneous with the No Kings March in Seattle. So we hear this is going on. And of course, what was happening in Seattle was very peaceful. There were a million cameras and eyeballs on it. So I thought, well, hell, maybe a better use of my time is to go down to the ICE facility in Tukwila. So we get down there, maybe 3:45 p.m. We are on scene for 30 seconds. And I hear people shouting, that's Brandi Crews. And look, I expect maybe some level of that, but I had covered the riots last week on Monday and Wednesday outside the federal building in Seattle with relatively few issues. So all I wanted to do is get video, document what was happening, because Lord knows the legacy media isn't going to tell the truth about what's happening, as we'll discuss momentarily. So we get down there maybe 30 seconds before they start to attack. You know, yelling, and there's going to be a lot of swear words. I'm not going to bleep all of them. So it started with just calling me a fascist. You see, you know, we were hit. Things were thrown at us, doused in what I can only hope was water. Made multiple efforts to move away from the crowd just to try to de-escalate, because my goal is not to go to these places and get assaulted. As I said on a show last week, I'm too old for this shit. So they're pelting us with stuff. My security, very calm. So we continue to walk, try to walk down away from where the Antifa crowd is, but they follow us. They stalk us. They harass us. They hit us with their signs, pelting us with Lord knows what from behind. And then, as I'm sure you've seen in the video, the scariest moment is when some rioter who has their whole face covered decides to take a can of what we later realized was hornet and wasp spray, not bug spray, not bug repellent that you can spray on your body to keep bugs away. Literally hornet and wasp killer. Sprayed it directly into my eyes, sprayed it on my security, chased us with it down the block until we were eventually able to get away, go across the street, wash my eyes out. They attacked an army veteran who had a good Samaritan who had come to our aid, pummeled him on the ground, kicking him and stomping him. And then another good Samaritan was able to get us out of there. So that's what happened at the ICE facility while I was there. You can watch the full video on YouTube if you care to see it. Got away relatively unscathed. As I said, I had, you know, I thought it was bug spray because that's what it really smelled like. But it was, like I said, hornet and wasp killer, which I'm very curious to see what the bottle says about spraying it directly into someone's eyes, because it certainly didn't feel great. This was the Seattle Times headline after all of that about what happened at the ICE facility. An ICE special response team and Tukwila police used tear gas on a crowd of about 150 people on Saturday. Ah, yes. All about the actions. All about the actions of ICE and police. Oh, they used tear gas on just a crowd. Just a crowd of 150 people. And the article itself is no better. The article focuses on the actions of immigration agents in what they called an unusual ICE screening in Tukwila, focused on the actions of police, did not talk about the violence of the crowd, which was more extreme than I've ever seen it. And did not talk, of course, about the assault on me and my crew. Even though we'd long put the video out, it was all over social media. If you read the Seattle Times, you would be of the belief that what happened outside the ICE facility in Tukwila was police gassing peaceful demonstrators. I think they call it a skirmish at the end of the article. No mention of violence, no mention of the assault on me, no mention of assaults on police officers. And that's why we go. You know, I saw a lot of people saying, Brandi, it's not worth it, you know, don't go. And I get it. Like, I do get it. I don't know if I'll go again. But if there's not people like us down there doing that, if there aren't people like Katie Davis Court, who was also on the ground, she was a little smarter than I was because she hid her identity, then we would be left with the Seattle Times version of events, which emboldens Antifa, which covers for Antifa, which acts really like Antifa doesn't exist, and that these are just people driven by their love for immigrants who tried to peacefully assemble outside a federal building. They're complicit. Entities like the Seattle Times are complicit in the violence. They support it. I would even go as far to say they support the violence. They support attacks on police. They support attacks on conservatives like me. They support attacks on members of the media who they don't agree with and who are their direct biggest competitors. Unreal. And the violence didn't stop there, because why would it stop there? The media just lied for them. The governor and the mayor on camera refused to condemn them. So why would the violence, ask yourself that, why would the violence stop there? If I were these people, I would feel totally emboldened. I'd feel totally supported by politicians. I'd feel totally supported by the press. I would know that every step of the way, they're going to give us cover for what we're doing. And so why would it stop there? Of course it continued. So then they went later in the night after the sun went down outside the federal building. Here's that video we were starting to play earlier. And they continued their vandalism of the federal building, which is a complete disaster. They didn't even stage the area of the federal building. They walked around totally free to light fires in the streets, to harass innocent civilians. There were cars trying to get through. They were lighting fires under people's cars. They were, I mean, totally unchecked. It was like the purge. No police anywhere to be seen. I mean, let me ask you for a minute. If this was, pretend those are the Proud Boys. I always use this comparison. Pretend those are the Proud Boys. And a group of Proud Boys had just been down at a federal facility, assaulted police, barricaded it, assaulted a reporter from King Five or a reporter from The Stranger, and then went down to the federal building, lit fires in the streets, vandalized the building in the name of whatever the Proud Boys stand for. Imagine how different the conversation would be today if these were Proud Boys and not Antifa. The governor would have had a press conference. Police would have been sent in immediately. Every single one of them would have been arrested. So it wasn't just fires and vandalism that happened that night outside the federal building. I mentioned earlier, I'm fine. The person who was attacked much more severely than me was Cam Higby, which is kind of a coincidence, because we had Cam, he was featured in yesterday's episode of Sundays with Subscribers. We were talking to him about his independent guerrilla journalism. He had just spent several days in LA covering the riots there. So we had taped an interview with them. Well, Cam is down there, and Cam always disguises his identity. And he's got a helmet on and all this stuff, and he's recording. Well, Antifa beat Cam, I think, with the intention of killing him. Here's a video captured by our friend Jonathan Cho.
You go. Let him go.
Let him go. That is a journalist being beaten senseless on the streets of Seattle. Had he not worn the helmet, I think he could have died, with not a police officer in sight. Here's Cam explaining to our friend Katie Davis Court what happened right after the fact.
Right now, the federal building is in complete anarchy. SPD has told several people that they will not be intervening tonight. I reported this guy, Tyler Han, H-A-H-N, also known as Tyler Stubbs, S-T-U-B-B-S, 3 weeks ago, that he threatened to murder me. He said that he's going to bring a gun to the next protest and that I better not show up. Today, he was able to identify me, and three of him and his friends, all three of them, jumped me. They held me down, they punched me in the head, and they beat the shit out of me. I deployed mace. I was able to regain my belongings that they knocked out of my pockets before they were able to steal them. But this is what happens when SPD refuses to intervene. They said that they were just going to let them tucker themselves out. They were lighting fires under moving vehicles, occupied vehicles that were stopped in traffic because they were blocking it. They lit several fires up and down the street. They were throwing fireworks at moving traffic. What, like, in what world are these things fucking acceptable?
In Seattle. in the insane world and political climate in Seattle. That's where it's acceptable. It's acceptable in the eyes of Bob Ferguson. It's acceptable in the eyes of Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell. And it's not SPD's fault. You don't think those SPD officers want to go in there and kick ass and take names? Of course they do. I get texts from them every single day during this. I would say 50 SPD officers texted me over the weekend, making sure I was okay, checking in, have you heard anything about Cam? We weren't allowed to go in. Do you think, how did Cam put it, that he was told by a couple people that SPD was going to let them tucker themselves out? You think for 1 second that had it been the Proud Boys, that SPD would be told by the mayor, let them tucker themselves out? Yeah, let the right-wing extremists just tucker themselves out, lighting fires, targeting innocent civilians, assaulting journalists. You think if that was a reporter for the Seattle Times or King 5 News that was beaten so hard that someone's fist print was left in his helmet, that he woke up the next day with a bloody nose, found out after he went to the hospital that he had a concussion? Do you think the Seattle Police Department would be told by the political leadership of this state to let those people tucker themselves out if it were right-wing extremists? Not for one fucking second. Not for 1 second. And that's the problem. Every single time in this state, in the 15 years that I've covered politics and covered protests here, every single time that there has been an act of right-wing aggression, violence, vandalism, I have spoken out about it. I can count those instances on one hand because it doesn't happen here very often. When a right-winger spray paint, pepper sprayed mainstream journalists down at the state capitol, I was the first one to say something about it, the first one to speak out about it, to condemn it, because it's wrong no matter who does it. But in our state, if it happens to the right and it's perpetrated by the left, it's not wrong. It's right. It's forgiven. It's excused. It's ignored. They get to tucker themselves out by lighting fires, hurting people, beating people. Have we lost our minds? Have you lost your minds? I saw one mainstream journalist even acknowledge what happened to me, what happened to Cam. Jeremy Harris at Como News, the only mainstream journalist I have seen who has condemned what happened. Out of all of them in Seattle and Washington State, one. Do you guys doubt me for any second when I say if it had been a conservative or a Trump supporter or a member of the Proud Boys who assaulted any of these journalists I criticize often, from whether it's King 5, Cairo 7, Seattle Times, hell, even a journalist from The Stranger, do you doubt me for 1 second when I tell you that I would have said something about it? That I would have been calling for action, for arrests, for prosecution? You don't, because I hope that I have shown you over the years that I have a moral consistency on these issues that our elected leaders in our state lack. Cam would be dead if he weren't wearing his helmet. He would be fucking dead. He would be dead. Not a word today. Not a word over the weekend. In fact, can we show this Governor Ferguson follow-up? After all of that, after what happened to me, after what happened to Cam, after the violence and vandalism at the ICE facility, the attacks on Tukwila police, federal agents, the destruction at the federal building downtown, here's what Bob Ferguson tweeted out. Tens of thousands of Washingtonians took to the streets yesterday, taking a stand for democracy and speaking out against an increasingly authoritarian regime. On a day that began with horrific political violence in Minnesota, I'm grateful to the Washingtonians who chose to make their voices heard peacefully at events across our state. What a coward. What a coward. No mention, the governor of the state, who had a press conference where he said, oh, we're going to peacefully demonstrate, can't muster one word of condemnation for violence on the streets. And violence, frankly, against his political enemies. You think there's a single soul in the state of Washington who's been harder on Bob Ferguson than I have? I think you'd be hard-pressed to find one. So he's perfectly fine if someone attacks his political enemies as he's talking about horrific political violence in Minnesota, which was horrific. But to him, that's a safe one, because it was political violence perpetrated against Democrats. So to him, it's a safe one to speak out against it. But anything other than that, he couldn't care less. He couldn't care less. And the Seattle Police Department has become an arm of Democratic leadership. And I feel bad for the men and women of SPD. I don't know the fortitude that it takes to continue in that job, given you have a new police chief that just prostrated himself in front of the Seattle City Council and said he expects Donald Trump to arrest him because he won't comply with ICE enforcement or he won't comply with National Guard taking to the streets. So they've got to work for that guy. They've got to work for Bruce Harrell. And they're out during the No Kings March, pushing out all these tweets. Just, oh my God, we think you guys are great. Thank you so much for being out here. We just want to say thank you to the tens of thousands of peaceful people who came out today. Over 1.5 miles full of people, not a single report of property damage, as if they should be celebrated for that. No, that's like the basic expectation, right? Thanks again to the tens of thousands of peaceful protesters who came to the No Kings protest and used their voice. And I wouldn't really have an issue with that. I think a little positive reinforcement is fine. But what were they tweeting out from their SPD account when things got violent in the evening? Condemnation? No, they weren't tweeting out anything. They were retweeting traffic alerts. SDOT was putting out traffic alerts. Demonstration on 2nd Avenue in Madison. Use alternate routes. Westbound lanes blocked at 2nd Avenue in Seneca. Use alternate routes. Intersection blocked on 2nd Avenue at Union. Use alternate routes. Use caution. As if that even really properly characterizes what was happening down there. They've lost their minds. They have lost their minds. And that brings me to my point about what do we do about it? If you've seen the video, which again, I have as much raw footage as I could cobble together about what happened to us at the ICE facility in Tukwila, you'll see at the beginning, I'm ready to throw fisticuffs. I was ready to punch a you-know-what in the face. And my security guard, Mitch, awesome guy, probably the calmest human being on the planet. You see him just grab me. He did apologize after. He said, sorry, I got a little handsy with you there. But he's like, no, one time, no, Brandy, just other direction. You can see me rethinking it. Well, let me try again. No, Brandy, you can't do it. I'll tell you, every fiber of my being wanted to beat them into the ground and yank their masks off and get videos of their faces. And I've heard a million times from all these people on the internet, why don't you have armed security? Our security was armed. There was two security guards there, actually. And they are armed. And then I hear from the people saying, why didn't they shoot them? It's not that simple. It's not that simple. We didn't have 200 bullets. And I will tell you, if our security had shot one of them, then we would all be dead. We would have been beaten to death. It's a complicated, complex situation when you're in the moment. And in a state like this, a conservative commentator and her security kills what the Seattle Times just thinks are peaceful demonstrators outside an immigration, you know, facility protesting. We would end up in prison. We would be in prison. There's not a doubt in my mind. So it's not that simple. It's not that simple. I will tell you, for those of you who are asking, we did go to the Tukwila Police Department. We did file a police report specifically against four individuals who we have yet to be able to identify properly, but who we do have photos and video of. Three of them who assaulted me, including the individual who absolutely felony assault, tried to blind me with hornet killer. And then two individuals who I think are pretty identifiable, even though they have COVID masks on. So I've put out some information about them. There was also an individual who threatened to pull a gun on my security guard as he helped the Army veteran who was being pummeled by six or seven Antifa thugs. And, you know, there are a number of other people we could try to identify and get charges against. But this is, I mean, they cover their identities for a reason. That woman there you see, if you're watching, not listening today, with the brown hair and bangs. She left. We got a picture of the vehicle she left in, but she took off the license plates front and back. So they know they're going there to commit criminal acts. And they take precautions to hide their identities, to take off their license plates. So, I mean, anyone who might have a business in that area or a house in that area with Ring cameras or whatever it is, these individuals, you know, did they put on their masks after they got there? Did they park somewhere nearby? Anything you have, we definitely want. Some good news, though, on the attacker front. The man who punched Cam Higby repeatedly in the head has been identified. From Katie Davis Court, did some amazing sleuthing. All the credit in the world to her. She put out this morning, "I have identified the Antifa militant who assaulted Cam Higby in Seattle." She identified him as Jeremy Calvin Lawson, 33 years old, of Monroe, Washington, which is pretty convenient, Jeremy, because I think you'll probably end up at the correctional facility in Monroe. So you can just go right from your house to prison. Good for you. Lawson uses the alias Jack Rack and has a history of involvement with Antifa, including Antifa-affiliated tattoos. He also has a long criminal history. So let's see what happens. There's no excuse now, right? There's no excuse now, right? He's on video beating Cam Higby. He's shown very clearly after Cam pepper sprayed him on the ground, his face fully visible. His tattoos match the tattoos in these pictures. He's in his chats on Facebook, publicly talking to other known Antifa militants. So there's no excuse, right, Seattle PD? If they're allowed to do their jobs, they should go out and Jeremy Lawson, we should expect to see his name in the registry at the King County Jail today, right? One would certainly hope so, for felony assault. So there's this whole question now that I'll get into momentarily about what do we want from the feds? What do we want from the feds? First, I just want to point out, because it was so happenstance, we had Cam Higby on Sundays with subscribers. Last week, we taped an interview with him for the Sunday show because we were talking about his coverage of what was happening in California. So the interview was taped before he was assaulted over the weekend. But you'll notice in that video that Cam, you know, is dressed as an Antifa rioter. It's because when he first started doing this, he realized that that was the only way to try to stay safe. Here's a clip from the interview. That's a strategy you started employing pretty early on. I mean, did you just have the knowledge that, hey, one day they're not going to like me, so I should just hide my face?
Yeah, I started doing undercover a lot after the UCLA riots when I lived in Los Angeles. I wanted to go undercover and document, like, kind of what they were doing inside the encampment, but I couldn't get in because you had to be one of them to get in. So I had to like go and buy a wristband to like fake to get in, stuff like that. But then I know they started attacking me physically all the time. So I don't like hiding my face. I don't like disguising who I am or what I'm doing. But when there's a serious risk to my life, or I'm just restricted from going into a place on public property by people who have no authority on public property, you kind of get forced to conceal your identity.
Yeah, you can watch that full interview with Cam Higby. Go to undividedpod.com, sign up for Sundays with subscribers there. We talk a lot about why he got started doing this, his experience down in Los Angeles last week, his experience more broadly with Antifa and some of the political cowardice that has come along with that. So you can check that interview out. So a couple things in my sort of plea to the feds. I just first want to address something I'm already seeing in the live chat. One of those individuals who assaulted us, the female, I do realize she looks an awful lot like Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp Perez of Washington's, is that the third district down there? Third district. It was not her. I do realize that they bear a striking resemblance to each other. And I also don't think that Marie Glusenkamp Perez is unhinged enough to do something like that. I actually think she's proven to be a fairly reasonable member of Congress. So for those of you who are saying, holy smokes, that looks like her, it does look like her. It's not her. As I said, there's really two paths forward from here. I think, to me, allowing it to continue is not an option. Allowing it to continue is not an option. I don't know what it will take for it to be condemned by local leaders. I don't think it matters anymore, though, because I think they've shown they're not willing to do that. And they're not really willing to, I mean, they'll let them tucker themselves out. Tucker themselves out on the federal building. Vandalize it until they've tuckered themselves out. Assault civilians and journalists until they've tuckered themselves out, which I don't think they'll ever tucker themselves out. So the paths are either we take matters into our own hands, which I will say, if I ever go out again, I'll be armed with some less lethal options. Stun gun someone right to the face would be really enjoyable, I'm not going to lie. But I don't think that citizens going out and confronting Antifa is the path that any of us want to take, and it's certainly not something I would encourage. So the other option is the feds. I had a few phone calls this morning. I won't say with whom, but I will say the feds are aware of what happened in Seattle over the weekend. I think they are waiting to see whether law enforcement, the Seattle Police Department, Tukwila Police Department, et cetera, whether they take meaningful actions to act on the intel that's been given to them. Certainly in the case of Cam Higby's assault, that should be a no-brainer. That person should be being rounded up as we speak. I don't know what the delay would be. So for the feds to be able to get involved, I think they're waiting to see if police do something about what happened over the weekend. But there's also, I think, an option that needs to be explored by the FBI and the DOJ, and that's building some sort of racketeering-esque case around Antifa. I mean, if they can do it with an entity like the Hells Angels that basically exists, there's an organization, there's money being passed around in pursuit of, you know, criminal ends, I don't see why you couldn't do that same thing and apply those same statutes to Antifa. Because what it's really going to take, first of all, from an investigatory standpoint, is some of the tools that really only the feds or large police departments have at their disposal. You know, when January 6th happened, the feds ended up pinpointing and getting information on every cell phone that was in the vicinity. And they went and they were knocking on doors months, if not years later, questioning people about why were you in the area? What did you do? So if they could do it for the J6ers, why can't they do it for Antifa? That's a pretty, that area in Tukwila outside that building, there's not a lot there. There's a couple warehouses and then there's a big green belt area. So they could very easily use that same tool, the FBI could, say, let's pinpoint the cell phones that were in use in this area and let's start going door to door. Let's start identifying some of these people. Let's start matching, lining up faces and names to individuals in these videos. The FBI could do that. It could do it today. I would encourage them to do so. I would encourage them to use the same tools at their disposal to do that for Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday outside the federal building in a 5-block radius. A little more difficult. There's some residences down there. There's some high rises. But certainly you could easily rule out if you get a phone number that's associated with someone who lives in one of the buildings. That's not your priority. We're looking for people who were there, moving about, there for a prolonged period of time. The FBI could do that. They could do it today. And you could start to name, shame, identify, build a larger federal case around Antifa because it's not going to happen here. Seattle PD is not going to do it. Washington State is not going to do it. It's going to take the federal government. You get these little cowards, these 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old cowards in federal prison for a couple years, they won't be back at a riot when they get out. They won't be destroying the city when they get out. They won't be assaulting reporters when they get out. Because that's going to be hard time, and they're going to have to do every single day of it. So that's where we need help from the feds. You know, you could try to go after these local leaders and these jurisdictions or whatever it is for not enforcing the law and not protecting their citizens. I think it's a waste of time, and I think that's exactly what they want. They want the federal government to come in to mess with them personally. Let's go after Antifa. Let's make a significant dent in their organization and in their ability to continue to do this. It's been 15 years from the Occupy to Black Lives Matter to the summer of 2020. Pro-Hamas, to now, I don't even really know, anti-ICE, anti-Trump. I think that lives, first of all, that crowd outside the building in Tukwila was the most hostile I've ever experienced. And you guys know what happened to me at CHOP. This was more hostile than that. More quick to violence. Far more. I was operating within CHOP for hours before they came and assaulted and mobbed me and my crew. Hours. This was seconds. And their conduct was far more severe. So people are going to die. And this isn't going to end. This is going to continue. We're at the very beginning of the summer. And as I've said, this isn't something new as it so happens. Fox Nation is out with a new special report that I'm part of. And it's looking at the five-year kind of anniversary of CHOP, of the Occupied protest, in Seattle, which, of course, we went through a lot. So they feature me in this special, along with other individuals who were part of what happened during that month in the city of Seattle, the so-called Summer of Love. So I want to play this Fox Nation promo. We've been given permission to do that today. I can't pretend. I see.
WCDN.
Nothing prepared me for what would happen in that month in Seattle.
He was bigger than just George Floyd.
There were people running around the chop zone with AR-15s.
Frozen water bottles, bricks, rocks, anything they could get their hands on.
Political failure, violence, cowardice. There is no one coming to help you because the police had completely left the area.
Free Capitol Hill.
The Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone.
I thought it was called CHAZ.
Now it's called CHOP.
Capitol Hill Organized Protest.
CHOP just destroyed my whole family.
Why didn't you put the brakes on it days ago?
We all reached our breaking point at that moment.
To this day, it's unlike anything that I've experienced.
That's why politics should never cross paths in public safety.
Why did you have to wait till another young man passed away?
When it does, people die.
Summer of Chaos, streaming now on Fox Nation. And again, what's changed? 5 years after this embarrassing moment in our city that I think has really stands out as this exceptional moment of political cowardice, which is why everyone uses that phrase, summer of love, which is what Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan called it at the time. And of course, people ended up dying there, not at the hands of police, of course. So Summer of Chaos streaming now on Fox Nation. And I think it's fitting they actually moved up the release of it because of all the unrest happening right now in the city of Seattle and beyond. It's pretty timely. But you watch it and you hear some of it, and so that same stuff is happening now. I mean, leadership has not been willing to do anything significantly different in Seattle or Washington State or really in any deep blue areas for, 5 years later. So we have a president in the White House who's willing to do something about it. We have a head of the FBI who I think is willing to do something about it, DOJ, et cetera, et cetera. Everything we need at the federal level is in place. And I realize that they have a lot of priorities right now. I realize they have their iron in a million different fires. But at this point, we are begging them to come to Seattle and to help us to disrupt Antifa so that we don't resign ourselves to this just being how things are always going to be. And between myself, Andy Ngo, Cam Higby, Katie Davis Court, Jonathan Cho, we have all the footage they could ever need. We have all the intel they could ever need to start to build their cases. And I speak for myself, but I'm sure I speak for them in saying we will cooperate in any way possible to try to bring down Antifa as an organization. And I'll end with shame on you, Governor Bob Ferguson. Shame on you, Mayor Bruce Harrell. You're cowards. You are worthless as far as leaders being leaders of anything. You are entirely captured by the far left, and you're literally willing to let people die if it means you don't have to be on camera condemning Antifa. You're literally willing to let people die, and that's pretty disgusting. All right, speaking of political violence, we're going to talk about what happened in Minnesota over the weekend. Just horrible, but I think it also points to this larger problem of selective outrage and moral hypocrisy when it comes to political violence. First, our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com is pretty busy right now. There's a lot of people who are pinging him trying to leave the state for obvious reasons, as we all just talked about. My husband was telling me this morning he's never seen so many homes for sale in the richer area of where we live. Like some of the mansion homes, he's like, the rich people who are sick of the taxes, they're leaving. I'm like, wow, I wish we had enough money to buy one of their homes because those houses are nice. So if that's you, or if you're just, selling your home to move elsewhere in Washington State, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. Selling your house is always stressful. I think one of the great things about Wes is he's got excellent communication and their marketing plan is second to none. I mean, to be able to get the most eyeballs on your listing ultimately leads to more feet in the door and better offers on the table. So Wes is your guy. Check out a few real estate agents, but don't choose one until you've reached out to our friend Wes Jones. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. It is simply a better way to sell your home. All right. So I do want to talk about what happened in Minnesota. And this is, horrible. Minnesota lawmaker Melissa Hortman was killed. State Senator John Hoffman in Minnesota wounded in what was characterized as a targeted act of political violence. And there's really no doubt at this point that that's what it was. And this is horrifying. And I'm from Minnesota. In fact, the suspect in this case was arrested really close to where my little brother lives in the woods. And I was like, oh my gosh, did you guys know that this was happening near you? So I have a lot of friends and family in this area in particular. But just a horrifying ordeal. I mean, he had disguised himself in a pretty realistic looking mask as a law enforcement officer, went to their homes, not only shot the lawmakers, but their spouses as well. I think in the case of Melissa Hortman, also killed her dog in these targeted acts of political violence. You know, and this isn't a breaking news show. It's not a national news show. I will say I got caught up a little bit as well in the whodunit. And why? In the motive of it? Of course, we want to know the motive, right? But I think whenever one of these acts of political violence happens, immediately the left and the right, all they want before anything, before the truth, before anything, is to find ways to suggest that the other side did it. And, you know, there was information coming out about this guy right away that I think is perfectly appropriate to share. I mean, he was a appointee of Tim Walz. He serves on some sort of coalition called like the Minnesota Africa Coalition. So there were some things pointing out. He had flyers in his vehicle that said No Kings all over it. So there was a lot of information fairly early on that I think suggested it could have been like a far left activist sort of thing. Melissa Hortman, who was killed, she had just, I think a couple days before, the day before, taking this vote that stopped illegal aliens from getting free health care. So all the conservatives sort of jump on that. And I'll admit, I sort of saw that and thought the same thing. And they assumed and they pushed and I want this guy to have been on the left. And maybe that's natural. Maybe it's natural to say, I don't want it to have been one of ours that carried out an act of political violence. But I think the more information that comes out, it's looking like he, you know, isn't a Democrat, that he's a Trump supporter. But the bottom line is, like, until his manifesto, and they said it wasn't even really a manifesto. Do we have that clip, Nicole? I don't even know if a traditional sort of manifesto in the true sense was released. All we know is he had like a list of Democratic lawmakers in his vehicle, and the people who he shot were on that list. So it seems like that's who he was out targeting.
There's been a lot of press coverage and speculation and discussion of a manifesto. I've seen nothing like a Unabomber style manifesto in his writings. He had many, many notebooks full of plans, lists of names, surveillance, efforts that he took to surveil and locate the home addresses and family members' relationships with these elected officials. But I have not seen anything involving some sort of political screed or manifesto that would clearly identify what motivated him. Obviously, his primary motive was to go out and murder people. Now, they were all elected officials. They were all Democrats. Beyond that, I think it's just way too speculative for anyone who's reviewed these materials to know and to say what was motivating him in terms of ideology or specific issues. There's a lot of
abortion rights supporters.
There were some abortion rights supporters, I believe, on the list. But again, there was dozens and dozens and dozens of names on, you know, hundreds of pages of documents that were recovered.
Yeah, and I think that we've gotten away from this, like, let's wait for the facts, you know? I think for a long time, we're just not willing to wait for the facts. And I've been guilty of this at times as well. And I'll be honest, I was hoping beyond hope that it was, I mean, it's a horrible, horrible situation, but there's that little part of you that says, God, I hope it wasn't a Republican or a Trump supporter, because then that's what everybody's going to glob onto. Until he comes out and says, or there's some definitive evidence of why he did it, you know, I'm not going to speculate on that. But I wonder, you know, how we get out of that sort of death cycle, so to speak, of like immediately we want so badly for it not to be our side that perpetrated some act of violence, but because we take it personally. Is that why? I mean, we're worried it gives the other side like too much ammunition against us. And to me, at the end of the day, you know, both sides are capable of political violence. Both sides are capable and have carried out murder for the sake of politics. But at the core, these are all deeply mentally disturbed individuals. They don't represent any group of people. You know, you have to be very mentally unstable to hunt someone down and to shoot them over political differences. And that doesn't mean that I don't think that they know the consequence of their own actions or they shouldn't be held accountable for it. But, you know, I don't think that you can assign, you know, there were members of Congress coming out after more information came out about this guy that, you know, I think leans towards him being, you know, hunting them down because they're Democrats. You have these members of Congress who want to literally, oh, you know, Republicans are the party of violence over this. And it's like, okay, demonstrably, that's just not true. And if you look at all the political violence in our country in the last 20 years, the overwhelming majority of it is from the far left. But they don't want to hear that. And they're going to use this instance and say, oh, January 6th and this, now the right is the party of political violence. At the end of the day, if everyone just looked at it and said political violence, no matter who perpetrated it, is completely unacceptable. We're not going to stay silent when it's Antifa and then speak up when it's the Proud Boys, or we're not going to stay silent when it's the right, or, you know, J6ers, and speak up when it's this, you know, and that's what it's going to take. And I think we're a long way from getting back to that place. We all just so desperately want to point the finger at the other side. And there are states like ours. I mean, this is the reason we led the show with it, where, yeah, the far left is the party of violence in Washington state. There's no doubt about it. There's really no argument to be made. That's just factual. The far left is the party of violence. And we have every right in the world to be frustrated with the fact that our elected leaders won't call that out. And if there was an instance of right-wing violence that happened over the weekend in Seattle, there wasn't. But if there was, Bob Ferguson would have been talking about that. They would have been blowing that up. They would have ignored Antifa violence. So it starts at the top, and it starts with our elected leaders, people who have a platform like this one, to be able to universally condemn political violence quickly, unequivocally, without qualification, and without comparing. Oh, we did this, but you did that. That's what always happens with Any of the left-wing extremism that we've seen in the last, whether it's pro-Gaza or whatever it is, what is the common response you always get from the left? Yo, what about January 6th? Like, the dumbest, tells me immediately, unintelligent, deeply unintelligent person. Like 500 acts of left-wing political violence, and they keep going back to, yeah, about January 6th. Until we can stop doing that and stop qualifying and saying, I'm going to condemn this act, I'm condemning this act, I'm condemning this act, then we're not never going to get out of this point. And so it was kind of sad to see, especially, you know, my home state of Minnesota, such wonderful people. This state lawmaker, you know, I'd never heard of her before, but watching some videos of her talking, you know, she clearly took her job really personally. And whether I agree with every vote she ever took or every position she ever had, it was undeniable that this is someone who really cared about her role as a public servant and wanted to do a good job for the people she served in Minnesota. And that should be enough. You know, that should be enough. So just horrible what happened in Minnesota over the weekend. I would encourage all of you. I would also encourage myself to stop with this sort of jump to conclusions and sharing information that maybe might prop up that it was somebody from this side or somebody from that side. We just have to get away from that and just condemn it unequivocally and not, you know, sort of look for ways to blame it on other people or to excuse it. All right, we do have an update for you on that crazy protest at a graduation ceremony at the University of Washington. We've now gotten a response from UW on why they didn't take action to stop it sooner. First, things have been a little bit up and down, certainly on the stock market. If you're getting close to retirement, you're getting a little concerned about your retirement portfolio. Maybe it's been going through some massive swings. Reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. At Bulwark Capital, they specialize in managing risk. So they're going to try to make sure that to the extent possible, risk is managed on your retirement investments. And I mean, it's because we all plan for our retirement. You only get one retirement. You want to make sure it's protected and that you can live out whatever your dream retirement is. And so Zach was telling us that if you're, you know, if this, when the stocks were taking crazy swings over tariffs, if you were losing a bunch of money, I mean, he said that's probably a good indicator that your investments are not properly diversified. And so I think it's something just worth having Zach take a second look at. Know Your Risk portfolio review can be scheduled now at knowyourriskpodcast.com. That's knowyourriskpodcast.com. Do not put it off, especially if you're nearing retirement. Make sure that your portfolio is properly protected against risk. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Okay, as we told you exclusively on the show last week, at the UW Law School graduation, there was an unhinged activist who displayed a pro-violence sign and was allowed to do so unfettered for up to 10 minutes. We asked UW why. We finally got an answer. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Doop, boop, boop. Okay, so here's the picture in question that we shared on the show last week. We already told subscribers about this on Sunday, but we thought it was an important enough update to inform the rest of you about. So UW Law School graduation is happening. Some person goes up on stage right where graduates are going to be walking after they get their diploma, holds up a sign, "You can't be pro-Palestine without being pro-armed resistance." So clearly a call to violence, right? And it, can you imagine being a Jewish student graduating from law school and having somebody go up and hold up that sign? And it's not like it was some crazed protester who went out up there, you know, rushed the stage and put it up and was immediately taken away. No. 10 minutes. 10 minutes. That person was allowed to stand there as individuals graduated from law school and hold up a sign encouraging violence against Jews. 10 minutes. So we reached out to the University of Washington. We hadn't heard a response by the end of Thursday's show, so we wanted to make sure we read their response for you. Which, look, I am appreciative of Victor Bolto with UW Communications getting back to us, but this is utter nonsense. Nothing in this makes sense. It says, the University of Washington condemns any calls for violence. The event continued without interruption. There was no audible response or reaction from audience members. As if that makes it okay. Oh, well, the audience didn't gasp in horror, so we just let him stand up there. He goes on to say, law school leadership on stage were focused on the celebration and didn't notice the individual. You didn't notice someone holding up a 4-foot-high sign? Really? You expect us to believe that? He says, unfortunately, it took some time for event managers to be made aware of this sign being held up. What are you talking about? Like, the whole thing's being streamed on video. There's hundreds of people in the room. You're telling me not only did the leadership on stage not notice, but the people whose job it was to manage the event, it took them some time to be made aware of the sign. Are you buying any of this? Insane. The individual left when asked to leave. Oh, how nice. Nonetheless, it is deeply disappointing that someone would seek to disrupt a joyous celebration for about 300 graduates from the UW School of Law in this manner. Here's the part that really gets me. We are working to confirm the identity of the individual who is responsible. And we will take investigatory or disciplinary steps as needed. You had them there. And you just asked them kindly to leave, and they did. You literally had them there. And now you're saying, we're going to investigate who it was. Remember, they did this same thing when the little Hamas supporters took over the quad at UW. When it finally got so bad and the violence and or the vandalism got so bad and everything was out of control, they just let everyone leave. And then remember what they said after the fact? We're going to work to identify the individuals who committed criminal behavior. You think they ever did? Or if there were students, you know, harassing Jewish people on campus, we're going to look into that. You had them there. You could have ordered them to be arrested. And then you definitely would have been able to identify them. Instead, you let them go and said, we'll try to figure it out later. Never happened. Later never came. So you have this person, gets up on stage, could have been a student or a faculty member, because we know a lot of UW faculty are engaged in this nonsense, held up this sign encouraging violence that these law school students had to walk by off the stage. And now you're saying, we'll try to figure out who it was. I can't believe these people. They've lost their minds. Can you imagine, seriously, being a Jewish family there to watch your Jewish student graduate from law school at UW, and they have to walk by a sign that says, you can't be pro-Palestine without pro-Palestine armed resistance. And the UW's just like, well, we didn't see him. We didn't see him. And when we asked them to leave, they did. So no big deal. Just nuts. Had to share that update with you. Absolutely insane. Nicole, I think I'm going to skip the EV story today just because we're going a little bit long and there's some other things I still want to talk about. Let's get to our daily subscriber show poll, shall we? I asked you guys, because this is this common talking point from the left. Antifa isn't real. Antifa's not real. And I get it that, you know, it's not like they wear a patch that says Antifa. But last week when they assaulted Andrea Suarez and she said, where's the police? Remember what they responded? There are no police. This is Antifa land. So even Antifa says, yeah, we're real. And the Democrats say Antifa's not real. Antifa's like, yes, we are. No, they're not real. So I asked you guys, I wanted to gauge whether you feel like, you know, before I gave my opinion on it, whether you think Antifa is a real organized group. I think that's the key in my poll. Nicole, hello.
Hey.
Is Antifa a real organized group?
Antifa is real. Or, well, they've, I don't, know how smart and organized they are, but
we're not
talking.
Listen, we're not
in their own organization.
Yeah, we're definitely not talking about intelligence.
Right, exactly. So, in their own chaotic organization, they're organized.
Okay, gotcha. In their own weird way. Yeah, I mean, there's clearly an organization, and they're on. If you go to the Reddit, some of the threads on there, some of the Discord streams, they plan this stuff. Like within seconds of me showing up on Monday, last Monday, they were on their Discord and Reddit telling people what I was wearing. Brandi Cruz is here. She's got black shorts on and a black hat, and her hair's in a ponytail. So they do that. There's a planning coordination, but I was curious what you guys think. Actually, more overwhelming than I thought.
What? Really?
Yeah.
You thought that it was going to be
I thought it would be
nose?
A little more split on the organizational front. 98% saying, yes, you do believe Antifa is a real organized group. Officer Lee Groinman says actually something that I failed to mention in our first block. Domestic terror organization, it's a no-brainer. They own the D-bag party, and they know it. And yeah, that is another thing that the federal government should do, and I don't know why they haven't, is label Antifa a domestic terror organization.
Right.
That's a no-brainer. No. Why would you not? Michelle, a fully funded domestic terror group. Leslie, Antifa is well-organized, well-funded, and well-trained. Let's start ripping off their masks and getting them fired from their day jobs. And I will say, it's time. It's time to dox every single member within the law. Okay, there is a law against doxing. But if you are sharing information with someone's face, I'm not saying put their address out there, face and names in connection with criminal conduct. And if I'm doing that as a part of my First Amendment rights, you can do that. You can do that. So I could, every single day if I want, post a picture of someone affiliated with Antifa, use their name, the city that they live in, say what they did, and that would be legal and that would be fine. And honestly, I think that's part of it, is we have to name and shame them. We have to unmask them, so to speak. Andy Ngo literally wrote the book on unmasking Antifa. When they're arrested, we have to use those names that are in the jail database when that happens in the rare instance. So we have to track down pictures of them. We have to track down information about them, where they work, where they go to school. I'm not saying go to harass them. Please don't do that. Please don't post their home addresses. But if there are individuals who have been engaged in riotous behavior, criminal behavior, then we're perfectly within our First Amendment rights to put information about them out there. And I do think that needs to happen. And their employers should know. It's the only, I mean, they do it to us. They walk around at these riots with signs with Jonathan Cho's address on them, his home address. They put it out all over the internet. So they're engaged in criminal doxing, because that's actually criminal doxing. And then when you're out there covering their events, they get mad when you record them. I don't want to be recorded. Don't record our faces. You're on a public street, or you're taking over a public building, and you think that you have a right to tell me not to record you? People, they're unhinged child lunatics. It's really wild. I mean, scum of the earth. Scum of the earth. Just above pedophiles on the totem pole of humanity.
Just total losers.
Total losers.
Losers.
Kevin Gaylord, Kevin, I haven't heard from you in a while. What's going on, man? I doubt any have jobs other than what Antifa pays them. Fed should go racketeering route on them. Who's being paid? Why no taxes paid on the income? Yes. Alice, they should be classified as a terrorist organization. They should be investigated. I hope our U.S. attorneys in this state will prosecute. By the way, my computer's working again, Nicole.
Okay, good.
Unfrozen. It was like, you reached your 2 F word limit, Brandy. So now I'll freeze up. I'm sure Daryl installed that as a function on my computer.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
No. Not a bad idea. Let me see here. I'll go over to locals really quick. Kartz says, does a bear shit in the woods? Yes. Yes, they do. As a matter of fact. To Drowl, Brandy, they are organized and well-funded. I would not be surprised if Satan was the CEO. Todd Welch, Antifa is not a top-down organized group, but instead consists of loosely affiliated autonomous groups and individuals, often organized locally into small cells or affinity groups. I believe they use social media to mobilize these cells when needed. I also believe that they are getting more organized as larger, more established Democratic and left-wing groups see them as a useful weapon so they can keep their hands clean. I see the larger organizations providing funding, logistics, and probably training, which will increase, but always keep the arms always keep them at arm's length so they don't, so they have plausible deniability. Yeah, that's 100% what they're looking for, plausible deniability.
I mean, they just want to see what they can get away with. They're like, okay, if we do this, they'll let us destroy without consequence.
Anything. Right.
And they're just like, you know, little toddlers that want to break things.
Yeah.
And they're allowed to.
Right. If you watch the video that I put out, like as raw as we could get the footage, we had to piece together a few different angles from different videos that were sent me. There's this one guy, blue shirt, red hat. He's one of the individuals we filed assault charges on. And the words coming out of his mouth, he's clearly mentally ill. And I even tell him that. I said, okay, you're, because I told him, I said, if you support just assaulting women, then take your mask off and like, let me see your face. And of course he wouldn't do that, right? Because he knows what he's doing is wrong. And he's just on hinge. And I said, okay, you're clearly mentally unstable. And he just goes off. And I mean, these are deeply unserious people, but they're still dangerous. Like, don't get me wrong. They're deeply unserious, but they're absolutely dangerous. Clearly, they're capable of extreme levels of violence. And yes, I do believe it's organized. All right, we'll get to Nicole. Thank you. My husband's reaction, by the way, was so funny. He's like, totally, Brandy. He's like, you can pay people to go get video for you, which is probably true. But I had immediately, somebody else had been posting that we just got assaulted. And of course, I wasn't posting that in the moment. We were trying to get out of there. So immediately my phone's just like, ding, 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 ding. And like people like, are you okay? What's going on? And so I was like, I better call my husband quick before he sees that and worries. Mm-hmm. And so I just called him quick and I said, hey, if you see anything, I'm fine. Just want you to know I'm okay. And then kind of like hung up. So I called later and he answers the phone by saying, so we're done with this, right? Didn't even ask, are you okay? He's just, deep breath. So we're done with this, right? We're done. Just, he was having none of it. He didn't even feel bad.
I heard from a lot of random people that I know don't always watch our show, but yeah, we're very concerned about you.
How dare they not always watch our show?
I know, that's right? But it got around real quick.
Yeah, ridiculous. But yeah, I'm fine. All right. We're going to get to comments in our closing sanity check coming up. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Why? It's free. Why else? You could save a ton of money. I just don't know how else to convince you if you haven't become a member of the First Mark family yet. Everyone's a member of the First Mark. Anyone who's anyone is a member of the First Mark family, including our friend, former UW quarterback and sports radio host, Brock Heward.
Yeah, you are technically their customer, but you will find this out when you make that call. They're your teammate right alongside with you, only wanting the best for you and rooting for the best for you and taking away all the stress and confusion that comes with this crazy insurance world.
Yeah, so firstmarkinsurance.com, basically here's what you do. You go there, you schedule time to take the First Mark Challenge. Then you have to gather up what your current insurance information is and send it to them because they're going to review it with you. They're going to tell you, why are you paying for this? You don't even need this, or you're not properly covered. So they're going over all of that. They'll go out, they'll shop their market of carriers, and they'll come back with their recommendations. For most Undivided viewers and listeners who've taken the First Mark Challenge, they end up saving hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a year. Some First Mark tells them, hey, your insurance is actually pretty good. Good job. You don't need us. And then you just leave feeling, patting yourself on the back, feeling like you're smarter than everyone else. And that's nice too. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, comments. And then the ultimate closing sanity check that will just drive you absolutely nuts. Let's see. Got some super chats. Thank you. By the way, can I just say thank you to all. We have two big milestones. Come on, Nicole. Okay. So we... reached 100,000 subs on YouTube.
I know. Woo-hoo.
Which was our goal for the end of the year. It was our end of the year goal.
We're only
to hit 100,000 subs on YouTube. And we hit it over the weekend before I even got assaulted. Mm-hmm. Yes, we hit it over the weekend, which is great. Although I'm a little suspicious. No, I don't have a stutter. I just apparently am stuttering a lot on the show today. We have quite a few subs on YouTube, not that many paid subscribers. We have a lot of paid subscribers, but not 100,000. So there's some people on YouTube who can mosey on over and support our work for $5 a month, but that's our other milestone. We had a goal we set of hitting 300 new paid subscribers on Patreon in 30 days, and we exceeded it. 317 new paid subscribers over the last 30 days. Thank you, guys. It does mean a lot to us that you'd support our show and help us do the work that we're doing, pay for our security to do that work sometimes and all of that stuff. So we certainly do appreciate that. All right. Let's get to some comments. Matthew Adams with a super chat. Thank you so much. John took on a group of Antifa goons John took on a group of Antifa goons to protect Brandy. I maced a dude for Brandy. Oh, so this is Matt Adams. I didn't want to out him unless he wanted to be outed. Literally saved our lives. So it was Matt and his friend John, and they were kind of undercover in the crowd, not wanting to out themselves. But then they saw what happened to us and stepped in. And, you know, Matt gave us a place, parked his car so we could kind of rinse off our eyeballs and like was willing to get us out of there. And then John, he's the one who, there's video of him on the ground being absolutely mobbed by Antifa. And then Matt, at great personal risk to himself, pulls up in the middle of the street, tells us to get in, me, my security, and then John, we get in the vehicle, take off. People are throwing things. And then as we're taking off, Matt has like mace, like pepper spray. And there's this dude who's trying to come up to the car and he just maces him as we drive.
I love that.
Which was awesome. There's awesome video of it. But Matt, I don't know why you're giving me a super chat, because I owe you a lot for putting yourself in that situation to help us out. I just cannot thank you enough. And then me, Matt, and John took a picture after it. And it's kind of funny because when I started the day, this is one of the things that made me the angriest. I was having the best hair day. My hair looked great. My makeup was on point. So there's this picture of me at the No Kings protest earlier in the day. And I'm like, you know, looking all good. Mm-hmm, and then Matt, John, and I took a picture after the whole assault.
Drowned
throwing,
rat style.
And I'm like, like wet t-shirt contest, because I got a white shirt on with just a bra. So it's totally like, and then I'm just told my hair's wet. My makeup's running and I just look a hot mess. All right. Papa Woody, Sideshow Bob wants citizens to fight Antifa. He wants conservatives to fight Antifa so he can go after the conservatives. That's what he wants. Don't give it to him. And said, did you see the Craigslist ad, $500 for showing up? Yeah, there was a Craigslist ad circulating on social media that they were paying people $500 to show up to protest. And we had asked someone if they could try to
get in,
sign up and see who paid them. I don't know if that ever manifested into anything. I will also say, there's also probably a slight chance that it's like a Republican who posts it so that it can be shared. Yep. So I'm not ruling that out either. Now, I do think some of these people are paid riders for sure. Grandpa Barney with a $50 super chat. That is so nice. I love you and what you stand for. Most of my union linemen voted for President Trump. God bless you. God bless you. God. Oh, should I also show my... Oh, it's on the ground.
Oh, no.
I'll do it tomorrow. Sorry. Okay, yeah. Okay. I got a gift in the mail that was pretty funny, but it fell down and I put it there so I could grab it and it fell down. And I'm not going to reach for it. Ryan Crabtree, I will teach you the science of martial combat to protect you while you integrate and film. First of all, I'm a black belt.
You got skills.
I got skills. So I was ready to go up and just karate chop her in the throat. That's what I'd go for. The jugular, then the eyes. I got my black belt in the 9th grade. I don't remember any of it, but I like to say that I
had
one.
A lot of people offering to be your security next time. But I mean, your security did a great job.
Our security is
great.
And my, you know, going back to 2020 and the security we had then, it's a different situation. We can't just go in there guns blazing, like assaulting people back, which is just self-defense. I mean, we can defend ourselves, but you also have to realize we're vastly outnumbered. There is not a police officer in sight, so no one's coming to help us. And I do believe that had my security used his gun, we'd be dead. I think that we would be dead. And there were two Antifa members at least that had guns on them. So they would have shot us back, even if we were doing it in self-defense. So there's a lot of other factors. And I realize like your automatic response is just shoot them. So we'd either be dead or we'd be sent to prison. I have no doubt in my mind.
Sphinx. I also think that there's an element of these people aren't afraid of being killed like that, because that's not that's not what elected officials here have given them. And so like there was the guy.
What do you mean
they're
not afraid of being killed?
Well, I mean, no, like that's not a worry of them going into these situations, and a lot of them are just, you know, losers living in their parents' basement. Some of them are, I mean, the guy that attacked Cam was a commercial fisherman with a family, they just like, you're stupid. I don't think that they go in thinking like, oh, I could get killed tonight if I attack somebody. I mean, they're obviously attacking with that kind of mentality, but like, I mean, I feel like there has to be a setup to this. Be like, you come in like a DeSantis style setup. Mm-hmm. You come in, expect to be killed,
right?
And then they've been warned and done. But these people aren't warned to that extent. They're told to come and do this. And so it's not that I feel sorry or don't think it should happen to them, but I don't think you should be in the position to, or your security to be put in the position to pull a gun on somebody because they've been told it's okay.
Way too many consequences for us to do that. And we do go in knowing there's a risk. I just think that, you know, the other option is, you'll hear me in the video say I'm not running from Antifa. So that's a line I drew in 2020 as well. And if you've ever watched the mob video from 2020, I tell my security, and God bless his soul, because his job is to protect me. And he wanted, you know, he wanted to do other things. But I said, look, I'm not running from Antifa. There's a point where you have to, like, sort of take, make a decision. You know, in that instance, it was, I'm not running from Antifa and bringing them into a residential neighborhood where there's families and kids. I'm not doing that. I'm not giving them what they want. And also, you start to realize that there is no running from them because they're running, they're chasing you down. So, you know, and it's just this, it's a complicated situation. And will I put myself back in it again? I mean, you know, two major events in a row being assaulted. I don't know. I mean, I am too old for that. But again, we go back to
somebody has to do it.
We go back to the Seattle Times article. They painted that as a peaceful demonstration where the only agitators were the federal government and the police department, which is so asinine. It's insane. I mean, if you have some sort of Seattle Times subscription that you've just casually kept, you have to cancel it and send them a message about why. So if there aren't people who are doing it and who are empowered to tell the truth, then this is only going to get worse because the media provides all this cover. And so for people like, you know, Jonathan Cho and Katie Davis Court and Cam Higbee, and I'm out doing this far less than them. They deserve so much more credit for the danger that they put themselves in. Like, you know, this sounds like a humble brag, but I'm a little more high profile, I guess, because I've been around doing this for much longer time. So maybe they're a little more prone to sort of snap on me. But you have people like Katie and John who, almost on a daily basis, and Cam, almost on a daily basis, are putting themselves in a position where they could get killed. And they're doing it. They're not doing it for money. You think we get rich doing this? I mean, we are supported by you. We do well enough for this to be my full-time job, for Nicole to be her full-time job. So we do fine. Like, don't get me wrong. But for Katie and John and Cam, you think that they're wealthy from doing this? No, they're not. They literally are out there risking getting killed almost every day because that's how bad the mainstream media is. Because the mainstream media has abdicated their responsibility to tell the truth. And so they're willing to literally die to tell you the truth. Think about that. They're willing to literally die to tell you the truth. That's a journalist. That's a journalist. What happened to me sucks, horrible. I want those people to go to jail, but that's not happening to me as much as it's happening to them. Not even close. What happened to me isn't even close when you look at what happened to Cam. Cam could have died over the weekend. And so it's like, you know, we have to have people who are willing to do it. And if politicians aren't willing to protect them, like, we're going in, they're going in with some expectation that literally could be their last day on earth because the left wing is so out of control and unhinged. We have cowardly leaders like Bob Ferguson. Okay, CP with a 999 super chat, naughty language fund. I think we've long since retired the naughty language fund. But thank you nonetheless, yes. Linda, the president can send federal troops to protect the federal building. Also, I can't believe SPD gets away with just not showing up to that mess. They want to show up. I get texts from officers all the time. They want to show up, but they can't just do it. And to your point about the president can send federal troops to protect the federal building, for all the hand-wringing, literally, our state is involved in a lawsuit over what happened in California and Trump bringing in the Marines and the National Guard. And there, we don't want to give Trump an excuse to bring the troops into our... How are you not giving him an excuse? So you're saying we don't want him to bring the troops here or to give him an excuse. So we have to keep this stuff peaceful. But then you totally let Antifa tucker themselves out on the federal building. So it's like they want... They make no mistake. Bob Ferguson wants Donald Trump to send troops here. He wants it because it raises his political star. And then he's looked at as a left-wing hero.
I almost think that's why Trump's not doing it.
Maybe, because he knows it'll give him what they want.
Yeah, and for Fergie's not a big deal right now in terms of the country. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Just crazy. I'll go through a few super chats here. Old Sub Sailor, we want help from the feds, do what the local LEOs won't, and actually pursue, apprehend, and prosecute to the fullest extent of the law. Stephanie, thanks for all you do. Many others would not do this and don't do this. Well, I appreciate that. President America, when is Rep. Mari Levitt or any other Dem coming on the show to answer on behalf of the Democrats? Rep. Mari Levitt's the only Democrat who condemns unequivocally political violence from the left. And I don't think she should have to speak for the Democratic Party. She's not a member of Democratic leadership in Olympia. Every time she has gone out and she's called out left-wing extremism, the anti-Semitism, and all of that. And so I give her a lot of credit for that. But it's not her job to speak for Bob Ferguson. It's not her job to speak for Nick Brown and Bruce Harrell. She speaks for herself. And she's been vilified for it within her own party for doing what is very clearly right. Michelle says, we're amazing. Thank you, Michelle. That's very nice. I needed some compliments today. No, I'm fine. Old and cranky. Recall Bob is almost impossible in Washington. He is in a protected party. Recalling Bob is just a futile effort, to be frank. Sheldon, compare this to when Jim Acosta lost his White House press pass. The left lost their collective mind. Democracy was going to end. When they witness a reporter getting beat up, silence. And who spoke out when Jim Acosta got his press pass taken away? I did. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm the most important talking head in America, but just consistent. To show the consistency, I thought that was inappropriate. I also thought it was inappropriate when Trump banned the Associated Press from Oval Office events because they wouldn't call the Gulf of America the Gulf of America. Let's see. Killer GB 420. I would like to bring it to light a lefty here in Portland that insists on calling Trump Hitler and ICE as the Gestapo. She goes by Park Rose Permaculture here in Portland. I would love to see you expose her lies someday. Okay, I'll check her out. Park Rose Permaculture. Got it. Noted. Thank you for the super chat. Let's see here. Am I missing anything, Nicole? I feel like I did
somebody mentioned
good.
A Trump tweet, but that was actually a fake Trump tweet. That was somebody, just so you know, Matt wanted Trump, or mentioned, gave us $10 to say that Trump tweeted about the No Kings protest, but he actually didn't.
Oh, it was a fake one? Yeah, AI and all that stuff.
But I do wish he had. Yeah. I wish he had acknowledged it. It was a good one.
Yeah. Susan, as a lifelong Democrat mostly, I'm ashamed of how our elected leaders treat us, except Adam Smith, who I always proudly vote for, no matter which knucklehead runs against him. Yeah, I like Congressman Smith. He's willing to come on this show. You know, I wish he'd be even a little harder on the left-wing violence, but he's been the victim of it. And so he's certainly spoken out about it. And now socialist Shama Sawant is running against him. And she's just absolutely, utterly unhinged. You know what I thought about yesterday? What would happen if let's just say that Adam Smith doesn't make it out of a primary? He will. It's fine. Mm-hmm. But if it's Shama Sawant and a Republican who make it out of a primary, so you've got a socialist and a Republican,
mm-hmm.
would the Democratic Party jump into the race and support the socialist?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
I mean, she's been vicious towards
them. Wait.
Would the Democratic Party support the socialist?
Oh, yeah, Oh. Oh, for sure they would.
Huh.
Wait, you think they wouldn't? You think they're going to support the Republican?
I mean, no, I don't think that they're going to support, she's going to support the Republican, or they would support the Republican, but I don't know that they'd actively support. It was just, it was a thought exercise.
Yeah,
I
don't think they would be very vocal about it. I think it would be kind of this, you know,
well,
that's what happens.
Whatever happens, happens. Anyway, that's not going to happen. Maybe. Congressman Smith will keep his seat. Okay,
so.
With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Ah, yes. We, of course, saw all the Democrats suddenly embrace the American flag over the weekend, waving it proudly at their No Kings protests as they march throughout the streets of our major cities. And I just thought, isn't that beautiful? The left is finally finding its patriotism, you know? The left is finally embracing old glory in the red, white, and blue. And so that was even more beautiful when the Mets had a game. And on their Jumbotron, there was old glory in all her glory as they sang the national anthem. Just kidding. It was the trans pride flag.
Gross.
Literally, the Mets put on their Jumbotron. They showed the trans pride flag waving. And can you play that again, in fact? Because it's at the moment in the song where, hold on. It's literally the point where they're talking about the star. I mean, I know that the whole thing is about the flag, right? Star-Spangled Banner, trans pride flag.
Unreal.
Literally, who would ever go to a Mets game again?
I don't know. I was at the Mariners game this Mariners game. Was there this pride weekend. Stuff? There was pride stuff, but it wasn't overwhelming like at a hockey game that we had been to, right? God, like that was a little bit overwhelming, but it was there, and they were promoting the pride parade, and I was like, "Be careful! Don't take your kids."
Nicole's shouting, "Don't take your kids!" I'll tell you what. I have no interest in going back to a Kraken game. It's fine. I will go back, but after I went there for Pride Night.
Mm-hmm. Obnoxious.
Oh my God, just like I just felt like puking rainbow because mm-hmm. it was everything. It's like, can I just watch a hockey game? I came here to just see them beat each other up. I didn't come here to have your sexuality shoved down my throat. One more super chat, Brother Abe, doing this because I got love for you, Brandy and Nicole. And Nicole is my forever crush.
Oh, that's sweet.
Much respect to y'all. Keep up the good work. Appreciate also, the awareness. God bless you all at Undivided.
For Thank those
you.
That think I was down there, I was not. So,
no. Yeah, that was Nicole, actually.
She's at a grad party.
The person with their face covered sprang me with hornet killer. That was Nicole. She really hates working here. It was, in fact, you know, I'm sure if I look at the surveillance video, it's Nicole getting out of her vehicle and she's strapping up.
You know,
I would say FOMO. It was, except this person was clinically obese. Right. So I know for sure it wasn't you. That has been our sanity check. Love you all. Thank you for checking in on me. I'm doing just fine. Doing just fine, you know? Just wanna punch someone in the face from now and then. You know, I should go to a boxing class.
Get some of that frustration
I should go to a
out.
Boxing class. I'll just hang up a picture of the Antifa goon that sprayed me with hornet killer. I'll just punch it.
Burn some calories.
Till I tucker myself
there
out.
There you go.
All right. Thank you again to all our subscribers who helped us meet our goal of adding 300 paid subscribers over 30 days. We do appreciate it. It helps us out quite a bit. If you'd like to become a subscriber to help out our show, UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com, and you just click on the little thing that says support the show for $5. We make it really easy. And thanks for helping us hit our goal of 100,000 subs on YouTube. Now that we've met that goal 6 months ahead of time, we got to come up with a new goal. So I'll think about that. Okay, ta-ta.